So this is a combination, because since Wednesday, we have had a retreat, a silent retreat, on the Four Foundations of Mindfulness. Began Wednesday night and is continuing through this morning. And we'll be having lunch, our final lunch together at noon. So this is the final talk for those in the retreat, but of course, it's also our Sunday talk. So we had about a little more than 20 live in the hall, and about 30, it was a hybrid retreat, about 30 online this morning. Just so people can know, we have about 40 in the hall, and how many people are online? 87. So we are a good-sized community who have come together to hear the Dharma, share the Dharma, and practice together. Just a word about retreat. Obviously, retreat has always been very much part of the Buddhist tradition, especially the meditative tradition. And it's very much part of our tradition here. My own sense is, it's funny, as we, as a society, or as individuals like ourselves who are interested in learning meditation, developing oneself, transforming oneself, in a certain sense, finding time for retreat becomes a little more difficult because of the busyness of our lives and our responsibilities. And yet my sense is, on the other hand, it's even more essential. Why is that? And this is just from my own experience of working with people over all these years, is the nature of our culture, especially our culture, which is now so pervaded by media and immediate access to media and information, stimulation, that it is often very hard for people to really integrate in any meaningful way the kind of things they'd like to integrate, right? It's sort of like, what's it sort of like? It's sort of like eating a meal, but not having time to chew it. It's only through chewing that we break down the foods and allow it to be easily digested so that it can actually provide nutrition, energy to our bodies, right? We've probably all learned that as children, chew your food. But this is also even more important when we're trying to learn something or change, you see. Because I think the problem is, even if like on a Sunday we come here and we're very attentive, we're very present, but for many of us, as soon as we leave here, we're gonna do what? Click, click, right, right? And we're off. And one thing leads to another. And that's just kind of the nature of our life these days. So, I mean, there's certainly things, we're not going to talk about that now, there's certainly things that we can do as we see the intrusiveness of these kinds of devices and information overload in our life, but especially in terms of Dharma, right? And really being able to take it in. We need, I hate to say this, we need time. It's not a pill. You see, I think that's why we like pills, we like drugs, we like alcohol, we like sex, we like, you know, because it's immediate, you see. It's immediate. But unfortunately, it's so short-lived, you see. So it's fundamentally unsatisfactory as an experience. But to create the ground for real transformation and real inner happiness, unfortunately, it takes time, right? So that is where, I mean, that's why I think retreat is so helpful, because, like, you know, those of us who've been on retreat for the last 5 days, you know, retreat's an interesting concept. I'm not sure where it came from, but I think it maybe came from the military, right? So you're engaged, it's not going well, so what do? You retreat. All right? Again, I don't want to push this analogy too far, but you know, in that retreat, you take stock of what's going on, right? And maybe you reformulate how you're going to engage, right? Many of us, that's what it's like in our life, right? We're in life, we're engaged in life, but it's not going well, you know? There's a lot of agitation, conflict, ease, problems, you know what I'm talking about, all that stuff. It's not going well. We know something's wrong, right? But we just keep engaging. As opposed to, I think, a very sane response is, let me retreat for a while. Let me step back and let me take a deep look. And in retreat, in a meditative retreat, we are coming back to take a look, a deep look, a deep dive into ourselves. Right? And with the support of the teachings, right? And in the support of a community, right? Over 3, 4, 5 days, whether in group retreat or individual retreat, we have a real opportunity to really chew on the teachings and really get a taste of what the benefits of the practice can bring for us, do you see? And again, unfortunately, it takes time to do that. So I just, that's my plug, okay? I just want to make a full confession. I don't work on commission. So I mean, I'm not, there's no personal benefit here, okay? So this retreat has been on what a very basic, fundamental, one of the earliest teachings the Buddha gave on meditation called the Four Establishments, or the Four, let's call it the Four Establishments of Mindfulness, Four Foundations of Mindfulness, right? And we took a look at this, even though in the sutra there are a lot of there are a lot of practices in the sutra. We didn't have time to do them all. But I tried to look at it in a way that people could understand that it is fundamentally about ourselves and how to understand what it means to be a human being. You know, as I've said over and over, the Buddha did not, his teaching is not out of study, reading. He simply was able to observe deeply life around him and life within him. And because of his intelligence, and because of his diligence, and because of his capacity to really take a deep dive, and very objective, he was able to understand certain truths about the human condition. I mean, he was concerned really about one thing: suffering. Okay, so this is very important. He wasn't concerned about anything else than suffering. Why human beings suffering, and is there an end to it? Right. So it's very important that we always stay focused. You know, we get lost. Well, my meditation's not doing too great. My concentration's not going too good. You know. Well, that's okay. You know, it's good to develop meditation, it's to develop these abilities. But the main thing is, from my practice, am I suffering less? Right? Am I suffering less within my own body, mind? And even better, am I creating less suffering for those around me? Right? So the Buddha, you know, this was his major concern. And again, because he understood there's something fundamentally unsatisfactory about life. Even when it's good. Remember, he had a good life. He was young, he was healthy, just gotten married, you know what I mean? The heir to the throne, you know, it was all good. But when he realized the impermanent nature of reality, that this body is subject to sickness, old age, everybody dies. And that everything that he considered worthy in life had no permanence, had no substance to it. And all could turn in a dime, he was kind of consumed with, there must be something more. There must be a way of living that is satisfactory, that produces happiness and well-being, and there isn't this chronic sense of unsatisfactoriness or disease or dis-ease, affliction, problematic nature of the way human beings live. So when he went about the world for 6 years, going to all the major teachers, he was looking for an answer to suffering. And all he got were teachers who taught him, sort of trance meditative states, that in those meditative states, everything was fine, right? Everybody might notice when you're sitting on your cushion, right? And you got your incense burning and the aroma lamp is nice and you got your new age music kind of softly in the background. You got your candles, right? Everything is what? Perfect, peaceful, right? Right? But then we walk out the door, right? And all of a sudden, same old, same old. And that's what the Buddha saw. That when he mastered these yogic states, when he was in them, everything was wonderful. Oceanic bliss, all that stuff. But when you came down, you were still sort of imprisoned in this self-constraint. Okay? So he was really fundamentally concerned with resolving this, which of course he did resolve, because basically he eventually turned away from all the current teachings and practices and just devoted himself, kind of he had his own intuition that he had to just go deeply within his own mind to find the solution, meditation, right? But not a meditation of just single point of concentration, a meditation that wanted to understand, had insight, wisdom about the nature of reality. So these four establishments of mindfulness are his kind of one of earliest formulations. And there are various versions of them. The well-known Pali version in this book, Transformation and Healing by Thich Nhat Hanh. He also has some translations from the Chinese canon, which are interesting, because like in the Pali canon, it says, I heard the Buddha, he was in the market town of the Kuru people, names the town. In the one in the back, it says, I heard the Buddha, he was in the Jeddah Grove in Srivasti. And you might think, hey, somebody making all this up? But we have to remember the Buddha taught for 49 years. And he and his community were itinerant. And he probably gave the same teachings over and over again, right? Especially his basic meditative teachings. And he wasn't a recording. So he probably, based on his own development of his own teaching style, as well as who he was talking to, he might have said it a little differently. Okay, so it's interesting. And so there is the traditional Sutra on the Four Foundations of Mindfulness, but there is another one which Thich Nhat Hanh translated called the One Way In Sutra. I like that, the One Way In. Which again, they're basically the same, but they're a little different. And it says, there is a way to practice. So this is the way we began our retreat, with this kind of introduction. So this is kind of opening it up to the whole community, but also kind of a summary for those who are on retreat. There is a way to practice which purifies the actions of living beings. Okay, so spiritual practice is a purification practice. Not like we're trying to become something like pure, like it's a thing, but it's we want to get out all the contaminants, those things that cause us suffering, those things that close off our heart, those things that keep us agitated, those things that, the anger, the fears, the jealousies, all that stuff, the critical mind, these are the things we want to purify the mind of, right? So it can return to its basic wholesomeness, like purified water, anybody like to drink contaminant water? I mean, if that was on the shelf, at the store. Here we have purified water, here we have contaminated water. Your choice. We laugh, isn't it? And yet, all day long, we involve ourselves in contaminated mind states. And we never think about, gee, maybe I should purify this one. So, there is a way to practice which purifies the actions of living beings, eradicates all sorrow, anxiety, and the roots of afflictions. This is very important, right? We live in a culture that is really very psychologically based. Okay, I was a therapist for 30 years, so I can speak to that, which is good. But the basic format of psychological is remediation of symptoms, right? Basically helping people feel better. And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, I'm all for that. But here he says, eradicate all sorrow, anxiety, and the roots of affliction. So this is very key, right? We want to get to the root. We want to uproot it at the root, right? As long as we are just trimming the leaves, as long as we are just pruning the branches, but the root is still there in our minds, it will what? It will grow back, right? And so many of us, you know, especially those who've been at this a while, may have found I've devoted a lot of time to pruning the branches, right? And so, as you know, after you do a good pruning job, it looks pretty good. But then over the coming days and weeks and months, you'll find out what? It all grows back. And so many of us have that kind of experience, or even becomes a frustration. You know, I keep pruning myself, right? You know, it's like getting haircuts, right? I like, keeps growing back, I gotta get another one. I don't know what the answer is. What's the answer? But anyhow, so this is, you know, we want to get to the root, right? To the roots, you know, the roots of our stuff. It is a path which destroys the five obstacles. These are the five obstacles that really prevent us from being happy. We're either moving in the, we're either wanting, needing, desiring, grasping at, striving after, attaching to, holding on to, you know, things, people, relationships, you know, all kinds of stuff, right? So, you know, we're going there, and then on the other hand, we're avoiding, we're pushing away, we're trying to get rid of anything that we consider negative, right? So we are very busy, right? You know. Agitation and torpor. This is another obstacle. So one obstacle is all this endless movement toward grasping, wanting, needing. The other is this, you know, pushing away. The other thing is, you know, we have agitated minds. And, you know, minds that are just always busy, always have issues, always in crisis, always something's going on, right? There's always a problem that we're, you know, dealing with. So our minds are never at peace. We're agitated. Or else we go the other extreme, right? Torpor. We're just kind of, chill out, exhausted, right? Torpor. No energy, daydreaming, slothful. So, you know, those are two other obstacles. And the last obstacle, these are things that are obstacles for having an open, calm, peaceful, wise mind. That's what they're obstacles to. And the last one is doubt. Doubt is sort of like confusion. It's sort of like the classic, you know, kind of neurotic. You know that term? Neurotic or something? I don't know. Should I trust or shouldn't I trust? Should I commit or shouldn't I commit? You see, we're always in doubt. We're always in confusion. I'm not sure which path to go. Right, this one looks good. But this one looks good. But how do I know if this one's really going to go and take me to where I want to go? Well, maybe I should take that one. You see, confusion, doubt. We, you know, so it's also, that's not the mind that, that kind of really looks at something and assesses whether this is a right path or not. See, that's very analytical, rational, logical kind of thinking. That's good, that's assessment. But he's talking about this neurotic kind of doubt, this chronic kind of mistrust that just kind of, it's an impediment, right? Because it prevents us from really entering life, because we're always not sure. You get what I mean? So it can become a hindrance. So the way in is the path of stopping and concentrating the mind. So these are the four establishments of mindfulness. And it is a path, he says, because it is this is the Buddhist path. It's a Noble Eightfold Path. It involves right view, right contemplation, right action, right livelihood, right practice, right speech, right mindfulness, right concentration. So this is the way in, according to the Buddha. Right? The way to what? Right, the way to the end of suffering. The way toward, the eradication of all sorrow or anxiety. This is the way that leads to highest understanding, realization of nirvana. Nirvana, I mean, when all suffering ends, you are what? Naturally, you're what? Happy, at peace, right? You look around, you see other people who are still suffering, and you go, what? How can I help them? There is another way, you see. So love, compassion, it just kind of flows out when the mind has been purified, okay? So what are these four ways? And that's what our retreat was on. It's so simple. The practitioner meditates on the body in the body from within to end unwholesome thoughts, remove anxiety, meditates on feeling sensations, meditates on the mind, and meditates on mental events. Okay? So let me just talk about that. This is very simple. We all can get this. We're human beings, right? Anybody here not a human being? We're all the same, you see? No matter what our background is, no matter our level of intelligence, how much money we got in the bank, no matter our color, race, gender, orientation, it doesn't matter. We're all human beings. That is our sameness. And human beings are basically quite simple. We have bodies and minds. Am I missing anything? I mean, this is how simple it is. We all have bodies and minds. And so what the Buddha is saying, that the path in to freedom lies by becoming mindfully aware of what's going within our bodies and our minds. If we can get clear about that, we're on the path. Most of the time, we're trying to find happiness by straightening everything out there, you see. That's where we're looking. That's where we're busily working. Buddha says, no, that's never going to work, because the problem isn't out there. Problem's in here. So when we get the problems in here, we're looking for a way in, you know, because I want to fix the problem. I want to get to the root. I mean, you see how logical this is? Right. Yeah, if you're sick of pruning the bush over and over again, one day you might have a bright idea, which is what? I'll just pull it out by the roots. They don't have to deal with it anymore. Right? And I'd rather spend time growing things that are beautiful, that are nurturing. You know? Yeah, let them grow. Rather than spending all my time nurturing all this afflictive stuff. So, we began the retreat with, very interesting, this mindfulness of the body in the body. And what people quickly learned is I don't know my body. Most people do not know their physical body. They know their conceptual body. What do I mean by that? It means we see our body as this, right? Like this is a body, you have a body, we all have bodies, right? This is all we see. We see these external bodies, but we don't just see them purely. We see them with what? Ideas, judgments, evaluations, assessments, comparisons, liking, disliking, loving, hating. So the first thing that people discovered is, I've never really been in my body as an inside experience. I've always seen my body from the outside, and what I think is my body are all my thoughts about my body. Right? Next time you look in the mirror, notice whether you're really looking at yourself or you're evaluating yourself. If you're evaluating yourself, you're thinking. I mean, is that clear? And most people realized, yeah, they don't know their body at all. They just have endless thoughts about their body, and a lot of people have very negative thoughts about their body for all kinds of reasons. Okay. So that was the first aha, which we worked through. Okay, so if I'm not all my thoughts about my body, if my conceptual body is not my real body, then when I go inside, what is the nature of my, we might call it our real inner body? And the meditation takes us through, it's sort of like, again, like when you look at a body, all we see is the surface. Can you see that? We don't see what's inside, do we? Can you see? You can't see what's inside me. You don't have X-ray vision, right? So we see this external skin, you see, and form. But we don't see what's inside the body. What's inside the body? Parts. Lots and lots of parts. Isn't that true? Yeah. That's all a body is. A collection of parts, all interdependent, all in some kind of homeostasis, right, that is kind of running itself. But it's subject to impermanence. All parts are subject to impermanence. So when we go into the real body, we see it's just made up of parts. And they all came into being, i.e. we were born. They've grown. They are in a process of growing, being, and dissolving, dissolution. That is the nature of our physical bodies when we take a deep look at the real body. Not this body, is it beautiful, is it ugly, do I like it, do I hate it, am I a little too fat, am I a little too skinny, you know, I wish it was like, see, that's just our thoughts. But this is like, this is the truth about all bodies, right? All bodies are just made up of parts. That's what's going on underneath all of us. Musculoskeletal system, organs, internal organs, I mean, we're all the same. Even though we may look different out here, we're all the same. Right? And it's all subject to impermanence. Then we went into our third body. Does anybody know what the third body is? We might call that our energetic awareness body. Okay? So just close your eyes right now. And you know how you look in the mirror, right? You know your shape, you know the general shape, that image you might have. So just kind of remember how you look in the mirror, right? And now come inside your body, all the way down, like a holistic scan of your body. Don't think anything, don't name anything, just kind of be in your whole body. Be being aware of all the sensations. Is your experience of being in your body like it has a very defined shape? Is that what it feels like? Like it's a real defined shape? Does it feel like it's solid? This is, don't think, just have inner experience. Does it feel solid? Or is there spaciousness in your awareness of being in your body? Are there simply just sensations going on, which we might just call energy? Just relax into your body. Inside your body, like real time. Is your experience of the being in your body in awareness the same as what it looks like on the outside? I mean, all we ever see is the outer covering. Can open your eyes now. So again, so we spent hours just really trying to look deeply into the nature of what it means to have a body and whether we have been misperceiving all this time. So a lot is revealed when we establish ourselves in mindfulness of the body. We also learned two things. The body is a refuge. It's not an object to analyze, it's a refuge. That when you're up here and you come down into your body, all your issues go away. There are no issues in your body. Your body is just your body. It's just a realm of direct experience. Right? Just go into your body right now. Are there any issues and problems? Your body, you know, is your body having any issues or problems right now? It's concerned about that one, doesn't like that one, wants that one. But it's just your body. It's an immediate source of stability and calmness. It doesn't mean we don't need to deal with things, but it means it's a refuge for me when we learn to experience it that way. So that was one thing, body is refuge. The other important thing is, this is very important for people who say, yeah, I live too much in the past and future. I'm always zinging around. I want to learn how to live in the present moment. Anybody ever hear that? Anybody ever have that kind of aspiration? Yeah, I've read the book. That sounds good. Well, you know what? Your body is always in the present moment. There's no past or future with your body. And when I say body, I don't just mean the physical body. I mean all your sensoria. Your eyes are always seeing, like right now you see, right? You're seeing in the present moment, right? Can you see? You're not seeing me a year ago. Are you? No, you're not seeing me a year from now. You're seeing me right now. You're hearing, the sounds you're hearing are right now. The smells you're smelling, the tastes you're tasting, and the sensations you're sensing are occurring right now in the present moment. So if you go, yeah, I got to be more present to life, right? It's right here. Live in your body. Live in your senses. In Zen we say, when looking, just look. When hearing, just hear. When smelling, just smell. When tasting, just taste. When feeling, just feel. When walking, just walk. You know, it goes on and on. Just whatever it is, just in the present moment. Just be that, do that. And your body is already there. So you don't have to read all the books. You know, you don't have to endlessly listen to talks about living in the present moment online. Your body's already here, ready to instruct us. I mean, isn't that silly? You know, that rather than just being present to reality in our bodies, we'd much rather hear a talk about it or read a book about it. We are kind of silly, aren't we? Yeah. Now, first establishment is of the body. But again, we are not bodies. So our bodies and our senses, we move into the world. So we have these five senses, right? Seeing, hearing. So these are often considered, these are the windows, right? So let's say our bodies are house, okay? Our bodies are house. And inside our house, we have this awareness, right? This consciousness, conscious awareness, lives in the house, right? But this house has windows, right? And what's a window good for? This is not a trick question. For looking out, okay? You know, I mean, if we just had walls, it would be a little dark, right? And it would be a little... So we have windows. We look out. We connect with the world, right? So how does our awareness, consciousness connect with the world? We see. We hear. We smell. We taste. We feel, right? And that's the data comes in. Like right now, you're just seeing and hearing me, right? Those are the windows that are open, and data's coming in. So the next establishment of mindfulness is called vedana, or sensation/feeling tone. It's not emotions. What it says is, at like a subconscious level, we are constantly, as we engage with the world, we are immediately, not even when we're not conscious, we might call it having a positive, negative, or neutral experience. Just like that. Right? You see? We're not even aware of it. When it's a positive feeling tone, we what? We move toward it. More, 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 more. Good, 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 good. When it's a negative feeling tone, we what? Avoid, push it away. When it's neutral, we're indifferent. So that's also going on all the time, and it's unconscious. So much of our habits, our responses to life and everything is happening at this very, in behavioral science, it's called, you know, stimulus response. We don't even know it. It's a stimulus response. Right? Somebody says, let's go get Chinese food. For some people, immediately, unconsciously, the response is what? Let's go. Why? Because your conditioning around that is positive. See, there's like a little switch, toggle switch, positive. Let's go. Somebody else? No, I don't like Chinese. Right? Negative. See? All the time. All the time. I mean, I'm just being simple. It's people, it's politics, it's feelings. you know, we have feelings, right? You know, some people, sadness arises in them. Feeling tone, what? Negative. Why? Because of our conditioning. Somehow we were taught expressing feelings, crying, you know. So we have negative vedana. And we close down. We shut off. Other people, positive. Yes, have a good cry. And it's, I mean, it goes on and on. And we see people immediately, negative, positive. And then and we continue on. So this was a big one for people. Because in Buddhist psychology, what this means is we make, it's called contact, right? The body-mind makes contact with objects. Objects are things we see, hear, smell, taste, touch, feel. Even thoughts can be objects of the mind, right? There are thoughts we like to have, right? And what do? With those thoughts, those fantasies? We what? Keep at them. Pleasure, pleasure, pleasure. The other ones, ooh, I don't want to remember that. Too painful. Push that one away. So we're always dividing up. So so for most of us who are on retreat, even people who had, you know, as they said, been on past retreats or intensive, you know, they really kind of got it this time. And in the establishment of mindfulness, of feeling tone, we become aware of this is going on. It's called recognition, you see. Because from that toggle switch of positive, negative, neutral, then we, as we move toward, and again, you know, on this side, the positive side, we move toward grasping, attaching, addiction. You know, there's a place where it's more than just a reaction, but it becomes somewhat disturbing, right? But on this side, it becomes anger, rage, anxiety, fear, sadness, despair, envy, jealousy, you know, a whole, right? And the problem is our recognition that that's occurring in our mind because we don't have mindfulness. We don't catch it. The recognition is in that when it first begins, right? In this feeling tone. See, oftentimes we don't recognize it until it's kind of strong, or we don't recognize it until it's full blown. But you watch your moods. And I assure you, if you're really mindful, you'll see, yeah, somebody might have said something at a meeting and I just didn't like what they said. Just a little bit of negativity. And if you're not careful, what's going to happen? Which means what? Explosion, the jerk, right? You see? Everybody know what that one is, right? I mean, we do it all the time with people. You know, little irritations, little this, and before we know it, right? Yeah. So, mindfulness of vedana, or these feeling tones of what's going on in our body and mind, is very helpful for liberating ourselves from suffering. We have awareness. And then the last two, and again, there's a lot there, is of what's called mind and mental events. Right? And this is the place we usually live, you see, right? We usually live in the world of mental events, right? Thoughts, feelings, perceptions, emotions, memories. Everybody know what I'm talking about. See, that's where we usually live. These other vast areas of our experience within the body and within just the basic of just feeling tone, most of us are not present to. We're all up here, aren't we? Now, it's very interesting, there's an establishment of mind, and there's an establishment of mental events. Does anybody know the difference? Many people think my mind are mental events, right? You know, what's my mind? Thoughts, feelings, perceptions, ideas, memories. You know, that's my mind. But the Buddha said, no. There's mind and mental events. This is very important. Because if we can't distinguish the two, we get lost. Mind is awareness. Just aware. Just conscious of. That's the mind. And in that mind awareness, in that mind consciousness, things appear all the time. Right? Thoughts appear, feelings appear, memories appear. As well as sights appear, sounds appear, right? Smells appear, sensations appear, ideas appear. All these things are appearing and disappearing in mind. This is big. So meditating deeply on this and really getting this and having this kind of mindfulness is very liberating, because we're totally identified with what? Anybody want to say what they're totally identified with? Everybody in here, what are we totally identified with? What? Yeah, the events. We think we are the events, all the things that are appearing in mind. We don't identify with that which always is here, our fundamental mind awareness, that which everything's appearing. Why is this a big deal? Anybody want to guess why establishing oneself in each of these? Now again, we need to learn to handle thoughts, feelings, perceptions in an intelligent, transformative way. That's part of the practice. But the first thing is distinguishing between mind and mental events, between the container and the contents of the container, right? The container can hold anything, right? Today I'm going to put this in it, tomorrow I'm going to put this in it, next week I'm going to put this in it, right? We can keep changing the contents, but the container is always the container, right? This is very important. Because we are totally identified with the content, with the thoughts, feelings, perceptions, which are endlessly what? Changing. Changing, 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 causes and conditions, all day long, right? 1 year to the next, likes, dislikes, I mean, the whole deal, ideas, endlessly changing, right? But we are so identified that our thoughts, feelings, perceptions are me, that we get lost, lost. And, you know, that wouldn't be too bad, except a lot of the times we get lost in places that are unhappy, lost in places that are places of suffering, dissatisfaction. That's the problem. If you could imagine that you were identified with an open, spacious awareness mind, and that's where you were living from, perceiving from, and that you were mindful throughout the day that all the things that arise and pass, feelings, thoughts, ideas, reactions, responses, have no substance, they're all impermanent, they're all coming and going. You don't grasp, you don't push away, you let them be. Right? Does the vast ocean care about, you know, which way the fish are swimming and who's swimming in it? think about it, does it? No, vast ocean's big. You know, let the little fish swim wherever they want. Big fish, little fish. Right? Does the sky care what flies through it? No, lots of space. So, learning to establish oneself in knowing, in awareness of mind and mental events, remember, is all about the eradication of suffering and the creation of true happiness and well-being. I mean, that's what it's about. It's not just a philosophical, existential, you know, insight. Actually, the Buddha, you know, he wouldn't get into philosophical arguments. You know, in India, through today, metaphysics, talking about this stuff, is very big. Right? And Buddha wouldn't get into that. He said, you know, I teach only one thing, the eradication of suffering. Right? He would use the example. He said, you know, so it's like somebody shot with an arrow, right? Somebody just got shot with an arrow. I mean, I won't point to the heart. Let's say it's like they got shot in the arrow, it's in their stomach, right? Is it important to know what kind of wood the arrow is made from? Is it important to know what kind of metal or rock that the point is made from? Is it important to know, the feathers, you know, what bird it came from? Is it important even to know what kind of bow shot it? Is it important even to know who shot it? If you have an arrow in your belly, you only have one concern. What's that? What's that? Remove it. After you remove it, you have time. You can kind of examine the you know, you can examine it. So this is, again, very much key to the Buddhist, how the Buddha approached the human condition. So he wasn't into speculation. Was saying, if you have an arrow in you, you only have one concern. How can I get it out? How can I get it out? And if there's a wound, how can I heal it? That's the primary concern. Afterwards, again, sitting around talking about, you know, where this arrow come from, the nature of woods, various kinds of woods that arrows are made out of, you know, comparing one type of feather to another. You know, that could be an interesting discussion. But it's not a discussion you want to have when the arrow's in you. What does that mean for us? It means we have to be very honest and present to where in our life we are struggling, we are suffering, we are stuck, right? These are our arrows. Do you want to live with an arrow in you? See, if we thought about it physically, we'd say, no. You know, do you want to walk around the world in shoes that are two sizes too small for you? Anybody want to do that? Why not? What? It's painful. The first thing we would do is go, I need a new pair of shoes. But we live with our sufferings, with our pains, with our disappointments, with our hurts, with our fears, with our resentments, you know, year after year. Right? So this is kind of the, at least for me, in my own personal encounter with the Buddha's teaching 50 years ago, was like, wow, nobody ever told me about this, that this was possible. Huh? Because when we get together, what do? We talk about our sufferings, we talk about our issues, we talk about our problems, right? as if they're normal. You see? We don't think, you know, we don't go to our friends and say, hey, I got an arrow in me. Take it out. Please help me. Right? I got to get this arrow out of me. It hurts. You see? Is it really helpful to talk about how much the arrow hurts? Pull it out. Somebody might say, easier said than done. I understand that. But that understanding and energy needs to be there. Right? Yeah, and then you know, the whole path is about how do I pull the arrow out? Right? And how do I stop shooting arrows into myself? So it's very interesting. Tai did not call his translation and commentary on the sutra. Sutra means Buddha's teaching on the four foundations, establishments of mindfulness. He didn't call that sutra on the four foundations of mindfulness commentary by Thich Nhat Hanh. Right? That would have been more accurate. You know what he called it? Transformation and healing. So I'm turning it around. Okay? The healing is pulling out the arrow. The transformation is learning I'm not going to shoot any more arrows into myself. That's the change. But first thing to do is, how can I get the arrow out? And then how can I learn a way of life where I stop shooting arrows? How about all the other people I may be shooting arrows into? Even people I love or care about without even, you know, not wanting to. How many people are shooting arrows into society? Right? Right? Arrows are flying all the time in our society these days, people shooting each other. Anger, fear, hatred, tolerance, judgment. Right? Shooting all these arrows at each other. But first thing, what? Pull the arrow out so I can be healthy. So then this is the path, but it's based on the establishment within each of us of mindfulness. Again, easier said than done. This is why we have to practice. And it begins first with the body. Can I really get out of my conceptual body, be able to come into my body, relaxing into my body, waves of awareness coming into my body, and can I learn to stay here, concentration, and see it as a refuge for me, a place that's always available to me, and immediately brings me into the present moment. That's a wonderful gift of the first foundation. Wonderful gift of the second foundation, you know, of feeling tone. Oh, if we just slow it down, we're aware of what's arising within us. Oh, I can see, I'm beginning to, you know, I got a little negative hit there. If I'm not careful, I'm going to what? If I'm not careful, what's going to happen? What? I'll go off. Go off where? Yeah, go off into reactivity, go off into emotionality, go off into acting out, go off into wrong speech. All that stuff, right? Or here, you know, I got to be careful, right? Turn on the computer, positive Vedna. What's in here today? 3 hours later, you go, oh, there was a toggle switch early on. Pleasure, right? up all night playing video games, you know, it's like, it's all just Vedana. Right? So having awareness, having mindfulness, very helpful. And of course, then this whole arena of our mind, our thoughts, our feelings, being aware of what's going on, knowing wholesome from unwholesome, you know, this is all about the practice. So anyway, that's what we've been up to for the last 4 days. I want to give a special, up to very recently, really to COVID, our retreats were always just for members. And so the last couple of retreats, we've begun to open them up to non-members. And so at this retreat, well, especially in the hall here, we had, I think, 10, 11 brand new people. Some people had somewhat of a background in meditation, and some people just kind of walked in off the street. It's like, But I want to compliment the new people. I mean, retreat is not easy, especially first retreat. You know, it can be physically challenged. We're not used to sitting, you know, or chairs, for, you know, for extended periods of time. So there's physical uncomfortability. There's a schedule to get used to, silence to get used to, as well as, you know, when we're away from all our distractions, from all our devices, from all the stuff we do, and we're enclosed, you know what? All that stuff that we don't attend to, that's sort of going around in there, comes up. So for a number of people, it just, you know, emotions, things like that came up. So, but we're all here, nobody ran, good sign. So I want to compliment the people who stayed with it. I know some people had a lot of physical pain, but everybody learned to deal with it. And we had our closing circle early this morning when everybody, all 50 people shared. It was all generally positive. You know, people came out the other side, very happy to go on retreat. So that's what we've been up to. Any quick questions before we end? About retreat or anything. You know, we have a daily schedule. We wake up at 6, begin at 6:30, go to 9 o'clock. You know, usually the sessions are 2 hours. We have breaks in between. We have mindful movements, meals, rest periods, all in silence. Except once a day, we have deep listening, deep sharing, where people talk about what their experience in the last 24 hours has been. Thank you, everyone.